This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. They're known as crofters or tenant farmers. They live on the remote islands of the Outer Hebrides off the northwest coast of Scotland. And for more than 150 years, the crofters have made a difficult living on small strips of farmland rented from absentee landlords. But today things are changing for these poor farmers. In the first of two reports in the Worlds of Difference series, Vera Frankel investigates.
The haunting melody of a Gaelic love song cuts through the silence on a desolate outcrop in the Atlantic. In a small house in a treeless landscape of moorland and peat bog, a group of local people have gathered to make music and share a cup of tea. This building, identical to the others on the empty horizon, serves as the local cultural centre and the focus of social life. Duncan Mackenzie was born just down the road from here, 64 years ago. But the thriving community he remembers has disappeared.
The village I'm in, there's 40 houses, and there's about 13 empty, another 13 with just one person in them. The place is dying on its feet, really. When I was young, the place was full. Every house was full. This village, Habost, was one of the most populated. There was a bakery, a smithy, a lemonade factory. There's nothing now. It's all gone.
But radical changes now underway look set to transform this impoverished landscape once and for all, along with the fortunes of its people.
Get back!
A local crofter gathers his flock into a muddy enclosure to mark and castrate the lambs before setting them loose to graze. This man still scrapes a living the traditional way, from a few acres of land rented from an absentee landlord. On the 55,000-acre Gaulson estate, as elsewhere in the Outer Hebrides, this is the way the land's been worked for centuries. On a small patch of the estate, Norman Thompson runs a modest bed and breakfast.
Most of the land has always been owned by absentee landlords with vast estates. They had no interest whatsoever in developing the land. They would be more interested in the shooting and fishing that they could get from the estate, providing virtually no employment, no development, no marketing of this incredible asset that we have.
Given the nature of the system, croft tenants had no option but to try and get as much out of the soil as they could. There was no incentive and no opportunity to do anything else with it, as Duncan Mackenzie recalls.
When I was younger, they depended on the land. They planted potatoes, corn, barley, turnips. They just lived off the land. And everybody crashed in together. I would go and help you. And then the same for my croft. The whole village would rally round and do the work along with me. And there was no money exchanging hands. There was no money to change hands anyway.
But the enforced poverty of crofting life is coming to an end. A revolutionary act passed by the Scottish Executive has given crofters the right to buy out their landlords with government help, taking the land into communal ownership. Gaulson resident Murray MacLeod says it was long overdue.
Well, who owns the land determines what sort of a crofting community you have. It should belong to the community which have kept the land going, have shaped the atmosphere, have shaped the environment, have shaped the community they live in. They should be the ones who actually hold the title to the land, not some private faceless bureaucrat sitting in some office in Edinburgh.
MacLeod's indignation and his support for a buyout are shared by the overwhelming majority. And when it goes through, locals believe it'll remove an age-old obstacle to reinvigorating an ailing community.
The problem that we have here is that whatever we put into the community, at the end of the day, all it's simply doing is increasing the market value for the current landowner, and we just simply don't want that. If there's anything at all that we want to develop, we want to develop it for the good of the community, not for somebody else.
It's basically about instilling a sense of worth into people and a sense of confidence and a sense that they can look to the future and really try and shape it for themselves. People around here tend not to be the most confident of people. And I think if you can instill a sense of confidence, then I think you really are making a massive head start into preserving culture and preserving the language. I mean, the culture will change anyway. Everything changes. But it's just preserving that uniqueness.
The debate's now focused on how best to develop the land when the buyout's completed. The most likely and most radical option is the one the current landlord had hoped to profit from himself, a multi-million dollar wind farm powered by the Atlantic gales that blow across this island.
The wind farm is massive. You're talking about up to 300 turbines measuring maybe 120 metres in height, dotted around the north end of the island. That is going to change the landscape without a shadow of a doubt. It is also going to bring a bit of money into the area. That is one thing this area badly needs. There are also going to be spin-offs in terms of jobs, and that's another thing this area badly needs. So there's a lot of weighing up to be done about the wind farm. But at the end of the day, it's about whether the benefits it'll bring will outweigh that negative.
Back in the Habost Cultural Centre, the talk revolves around the future. People are nervous about what it might bring. But there's a growing realisation that a dramatic transformation may be the trade-off for preserving what's left of an ancient way of life. For Day to Day, I'm Vera Frankl.
Tomorrow, Vera Frankl looks at how the internet is changing life on the islands. Worlds of Difference is a production of Homelands Productions. Learn more on our website, npr.org.